ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hi there, Selena Green back again today to bring you The Country Hour on this rather warm Friday. I hope you're having a good one wherever you're listening in today. We're going to take a bit of time unpacking the RIC today, the Regional Investment Corporation, and the changes that have been announced to its loan programs. A new drought loan for farmers as part of that announcement yesterday by the Federal Ag Minister in South Australia. You're going to hear what farmers and farming groups have to say about that. We heard from the Minister yesterday. Today we'll hear some thoughts from you and others on that. If you've seen some of the details about the new loans on offer, do you think you'll be applying for one? Do you think it's the right way to go about helping farmers in drought access funds? You can share your thoughts on me. Share your thoughts with me on this number, 1300 160 222. Or the text line is 0467 922 783. Also coming up today on the program, yet another state has given virtual fencing for livestock the green light. And farmers in that state are lined up and ready to use it, but they still have some questions about how it all works.
Yeah, I guess just the maintenance of the collars, or the technology, I should say, and how reliable they are, I suppose, in keeping charged, and how effective they are, whether any animals, you know, can get past, I guess, which is very similar to a hot wire.
Now that is all coming up on the program today. But yesterday, yes, the federal government finally released its long-awaited response to the review into the RIC, the Regional Investment Corporation. That's the government scheme offering low-interest loans to farm businesses to help them become more resilient and respond to drought. As part of its response, the government announced two new loan products. One's a drought hardship loan of up to $250,000 for farmers affected by drought for at least 24 months. Repayments of the five-year loan will be deferred for the first 2 years. Another new concessional loan will help those impacted by marine harmful algal blooms and marine heat waves. So let's hear what the National Farmers Federation thinks of this announcement. Chris Young is the National Farmers Federation's General Manager of Trade and Economics. Chris, thank you for your time and welcome to the Country Hour.
Thanks for having me, Selena.
This has been a long time coming, the government's response to the RIC review. Are you glad that it has finally been released?
Yes. It's good to see the government respond to the independent review. As you say, that they've had this on their desk for 18 months now, and we, along with our members, have been calling for them to respond to it. It was one of the key asks that we had during the election earlier in the year. And we did that because we know how important it is for producers who are facing terrible drought conditions to have the certainty around the RIC.
And I guess that is one of the main things, is there was this sort of uncertainty what happens beyond the middle of next year. Do you feel, or does the NFF feel more comfortable about the future of the RIC and that it is going to continue to be there beyond the middle of next year for farmers to access?
We do. And the review made two central recommendations exactly to that point. The review said concessional lending, so giving farmers the option to access cheaper finance during times of need is a good policy. And secondly, that the RIC needs to be maintained as the way to get that out across the states. And so, exactly, it was critically important that we saw the government agree to those recommendations. And that's also been supported by the announcement by the Prime Minister in South Australia of an additional $1 billion of funding for the RIC. So that does give us some comfort that the RIC and concessional lending will stay in place, but there's still a lot of work to do. We need to make sure the loans are working for farmers.
And that is, of course, the big question. Is it fit for purpose going forward? What's your initial thoughts on the government's response and the recommendations that it has or has not looked to implement?
Yeah, I think we've seen overall that there's an understanding that the core purpose of the RIC is to give concessional lending so farmers who are in their second, third year of drought can get access to finance cheaper than they can at the banks. And that's what we need to focus on, not just looking at it in 1 year, but throughout the course of someone's loan, that is serving its core purpose. It was good to see a new product announced yesterday, particularly looking to target and support farmers who are going through extended periods of drought. And it's important now that we work with the government to make sure it does exactly that.
Because, yeah, I think that was one of the recommendations, that there be the shorter term loan option that really looked at those operating expenses for extended drought rather than in the original loan product. So is that something that you welcome, that new product? Do you see that being usable and workable for farmers?
It's good to see them respond with some new thinking there, because that was one of the messages that the NFF, along with members such as Primary Producers South Australia, had really put to government over the last 12 months, is farmers are constantly planning ahead, some of the best business planners you'll find, but even they, when they're going through 2 years or 3 years of no income, operating at losses, that puts pressure on anyone. And we need to be realistic around the loan products that we put in to make sure we actually give them support for those operating costs, which just continue to mount during drought. And so we look forward to working with the government on this new product. We don't have a lot of detail yet, but it's a good sign that they're thinking about it.
Concessional loans, so that is the aim here. The government's announced that it's frozen the current rate of just over 5% for a further 6 months, so that should take us around to about August of next year. Is that truly concessional at that rate? Do you think, can it be better?
I think it's important that we keep looking exactly at that. And back to my earlier point, we don't need to just look at a point in time. We need to make sure that this is concessional through the life of the loan. Majority of RIC products are 10-year loans. And so just taking a point in time is useful, but we need to make sure that they're getting a genuine concession throughout the life of that loan. So the 3,500 farmers who are currently using the RIC are using it for a core purpose to help them.
I think we've seen in the recent couple of years, especially the need for the RIC, do you think, and the value that it does provide to those who are able to access it, especially given the conditions we've seen here in South Australia and parts of Victoria and New South Wales as well, has really demonstrated the role of the RIC?
We believe so. We think it is, when done right, a really important tool to help farmers both plan for future droughts, which we all know will continue to come, as well as help them in event. But back to my point, and I can't emphasise this enough, we need to make sure the settings are right so that it genuinely is serving its purpose, so that for those 3,500 farmers, that they are genuinely getting support in those times of hardship that they wouldn't otherwise be able to access.
Chris, as you say, it certainly sounds like it's still very much a work in progress, and thank you very much for sharing your thoughts about it today for the country. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Selena.
Chris Young, the General Manager of Trade and Economics at the National Farmers Federation. It's 12 minutes past 12. Well, let's go to Emily Morgan. She's a mixed farmer at Jaybuck in the Mallee, and she's spoken on the ABC previously about her own experience of applying for a RIC loan. Emily, I know you're busy today, so thank you very much for making time to speak with me on the country.
Thanks, Selena.
The government's response to the RIC, we've been waiting for it a long time. You've had a chance to have a bit of a look at what they announced yesterday. What's your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts is that it's really not much different to what they're already offering farmers across the country. It seems to me to be a rebranded, smaller version of their flagship product, which is the Farm Investment Loan. The Farm Investment Loan allows farmers to borrow up to $2 million at an interest rate of 5.18%, and it goes for 10 years, whereas this is only goes for 5 years, and it's only $250,000. Both of those enable you to borrow for operational reasons, so I can't actually see much difference between the two loans, apart from the latest loan they've announced is a lot smaller.
So the previous loans, as you say, you were able to use, or people who applied for those loans were able to use those funds for operational costs, and that is the purpose of the new loan, is also to be used for operational costs. So for you, there's not much difference there?
No, and their criteria on their website states that the larger, longer loan can be used for operational purposes. And I also question putting the word drought on a loan. We've been told through the National Drought Agreement that we no longer declare droughts, we no longer put lines on maps. So what is the criteria to say that you have been in drought for 2 years? And why are we suddenly declaring a drought and making that the eligibility basis for a loan?
Do you know if has that been a bit of an issue, or has that come up as an issue in the past with people trying to apply for these loans for droughts that, you know, we don't have drought declarations? Has that come up as an issue before?
I don't think so. As long as you can meet, we personally have a regional investment corporation loan, so I can, you know, speak with some sort of authority on the application process. You just have to demonstrate that you've had a downturn in your production for whatever reason that is. That could be drought, that could be sheep prices, that, you know, that could be input costs, global economic factors, and drought is one of the reasons as well.
So it sounds like the devil in the detail is always with things, and I guess the parameters and the settings are going to need to be right to make sure that producers don't have to jump through a whole heap of red tape to prove that they would be eligible, that they've been in a drought situation to apply for these loans.
That's correct. And something that was in the minister's press release is sort of the headline wording when it comes to repayments is interest will be incurred, repayments will be deferred for 2 years. Well, in the other loan, which offers more money, repayments or principal repayments are actually deferred for 5 years. So you've got a longer period there.
5.818%, that's the interest rate that's been frozen for an extra 6 months. There's certainly a lot of debate that we hear around whether these loans are truly concessional. Does that seem concessional enough to you compared to what you could get from a commercial lender?
No, you know, I will make one positive comment. I'm glad that they have frozen it for another 6 months. That's definitely a welcome announcement. But, you know, in talking to our fellow farmers, they can access better or similar interest rates through their lender. And also we found through experiencing drought, particularly here in South Australia, that our commercial lenders have been really willing to work with us and have actually deferred interest payments and deferred principal payments until we're able to get back on our feet. So we're in exceptional times and we're looking for an exceptional response. And to me, this is not much different to what we can receive through our commercial lenders.
If you were to make some tweaks to the RIC as someone who's gone through the process to make it more accessible, to make the whole process better, smoother and more worthwhile, what tweaks would you make?
When we applied, which was about a year and a half ago, it was actually quite onerous. It took about 6 months from go to woe. So that was quite frustrating. I understand that they have made the process a lot easier and a lot quicker given the need and the demand. So that's great. But what we're really looking for, and I talk about, you know, we're in an exceptional situation. We need an exceptional response. What we're really looking for is zero repayments for about 2 to 3 years with a much lower interest rate. You know, we're talking between 2% and 3%. That is something that would make a much more meaningful difference to farmers experiencing hardship and those experiencing hardship through the algal bloom as well.
Emily, you've thankfully taken a call from us today right in the middle of harvest. Give us a bit of an idea of how things are going there.
So we're lucky in that we're probably across the board experiencing an average to below average year. We farm in the Mallee, so it's marginal anyway. We're seeing some sort of a little bit below average with our canola at the moment, and the barley is average. But you also have to offset that with the prices that are on offer and also the ginormous input costs that it's taken us to grow this crop. But overall, we're certainly doing a lot better than we did last year.
Well, I hope it is a very safe and successful harvest for you from here on out, and that the weather plays nice for you for whatever comes. So thanks so much for joining us on the program today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Emily Morgan there from JBuck in the Mallee, sharing her thoughts on the announcement changes to the RIC. We'll keep talking about this throughout the program, but if you'd like to share your thoughts, 1300 160 222, or that text line again is 0467 922 783. You're with Selena Green. It's 19 minutes past 12.
The Country Hour, celebrating 80 years in 2025.
Hi, I'm Jackson from Lamoureux. Happy 80th birthday to The Country Hour.
Well, let's go to New South Wales for a moment, where virtual fencing is now legal. That just leaves South Australia and Victoria waiting for legislation. The technology is described as a game changer, especially for dairy farmers and those moving to regenerative agricultural systems, but not everyone's convinced. It involves putting a collar on livestock that sends out noises and electric pulse to the animal if they approach a virtual fence line. And as Emily Middleton reports.
Virtual fencing has been officially legalised in New South Wales, and users of the technology in other states are already labelling it as a lifesaver. Farmers are spending significantly less time and money checking and moving stock, and with that comes huge lifestyle benefits, spending more time at home with family and a slashed petrol bill. But with the electronics reliant on telecommunication towers and satellites, some farmers have questioned their trustworthiness during emergencies.
I think it'll be a pretty handy tool. I see the advantage of the virtual fencing as, I guess, replacing a hot wire where you might normally run an electric fence to subdivide a paddock.
Angus McIntosh is a mixed farmer based in Molong in central west New South Wales. He's got roughly 2,000 sheep and 100 cows on his 1,400 hectare property. Angus is interested in taking up virtual fencing on his small scale property, but he's got a few concerns.
Yeah, I guess just the maintenance of the collars, or the technology, I should say, and how reliable they are, I suppose, in keeping charged, and how effective they are, whether any animals, you know, can get past, I guess, which is very similar to a hot wire. Obviously, the cost is the main concern, and there's a little bit of labour involved in initially getting a mob set up with it, and obviously getting set up with the software, so. Yeah, they're the real concerns, just nutting out reliability of the technology, yeah, once it rolls out.
Brent Thomas is the Director of Strategic Relations at Holter, one of the manufacturers of virtual fencing apps and collars. He said when it comes to holding up in emergencies like bushfires and flooding, farmers in other states have already put the technology to the test.
What we've seen in cases of natural disasters is that Holter plays an incredibly important role. For example, we had some severe storms in Tasmania last year, and farmers were able to move their animals remotely away from dangerous power lines without sending out staff and putting them in danger in the middle of the night just by using the app. And in the same way, if there's a bushfire coming, there's an opportunity for farmers to move their cattle to safer places. We always do encourage farmers to leave the perimeter fence up, and often the law requires that to be the case as well. So there is still that ultimate perimeter fence around the whole property. But there's a number of different safeguards built into the property, into the product as well, in case there are emergency situations. But what we hear from farmers is that the technology allows them to keep their animals safer in times of natural disasters, and also to keep their staff safer by not sending them into harm's way.
But, as Mr. Thomas explained, the technology is still reliant on telecommunication towers.
We install our own towers on farmers' property as well to ensure that there's additional connectivity for farmers wherever they might be. There's really three parts when a farmer, and there's lots of them in New South Wales, are excited about this, want to install Holter on their property. There's three things. There's the collars that everybody talks about. There's the app that a farmer will see on their phone or their laptop, but there's also towers, connectivity towers, and we, Holter works with farmers to install some additional towers on their property as they're needed so that the collars and the app can always talk to a farmer.
Robert McIntosh is the chair of the Animal Welfare Committee for the New South Wales Farmers Association.
Effectively, there is some restriction if it's all to do with telecommunication communications.
He said to the advantage of virtual fencing, this kind of technology will be able to aid farmers in times of distress.
The reality is there's a lot of satellite navigation goes on with it as well, and that's a lot more consistent and more reliable for farmers. So I think that's we're seeing a lot more of the technology using satellite more of that sort of tracking rather than just telecommunications. We do get flash floodings and flooding events, and being able to move cattle quickly into a safe environment or move them right off the flat quickly is a very good feature of the whole system.
That's Robert McIntosh there. He's chair of the New South Wales Farmers Association's Animal Welfare Committee, ending that report by Emily Middleton. Earlier this year, the South Australian government confirmed its support to allow virtual fencing here in South Australia. It's going down the path of regulation. So it has promised to draft regulations that'll be subject to public consultation. So, well, given the progress in Victoria, it is looking like South Australia will be the last state to have virtual fencing legalised. Holter, as we've heard previously on the Country Hour, is one of the companies that has said it's got a wait list of farmers here in South Australia who are keen to use the technology, but it is one of a few companies that do offer this virtual fencing service, and they say they're ready to go. So we wait and watch the progress for that rollout here in South Australia. It's 25 minutes past 12.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Selena Green with you on this Friday for the Country Hour. It is time to head to the Weather Bureau. Our forecaster today is Lincoln Traynor. Hi, Lincoln.
Good afternoon, Selena. How are you today?
Very good. I'm quite warm, as I'm sure a lot of folks are across South Australia today.
Yeah, it's an absolute warm day today. I was just looking at, I mean, we've got this set up today with this large high-pressure system in the Tasman Sea. It's very large and it's directing this kind of east to northeasterly flow across the state, and had a relatively warm night, and it's going to even be a warmer day. And for that reason, the Bureau has issued a fire weather warning for the west coast, eastern and lower Eyre Peninsula due to some gusty southerly winds behind a trough that are going to develop this afternoon. So that's a real watch point today. And also we have a severe heatwave warning, which I'm sure you're aware of. It's been going for the last few days in the northwest, northeast pastoral districts, and that's going to ease over the weekend as that trough moves across. So today we have a trough that's developed over the north and west of the state, and that's slowly moving east with a fresh to strong and gusty change that's slowly extending across the state at the moment. It will move into the east by the evening, and there's a continued risk of thunderstorms mainly in the northeast. Unfortunately, with little to no rainfall. We could also see some, and I'm even looking at the satellite picture now, potential for raised dust in the west with those gusty southerly winds. So that's also a watch point out there in the west. It will be a relatively hot and dry day, as we've said, for most of the state, with many maximum temperatures being way above average of 6 to 12 degrees. And then for Saturday, this trough is going to linger in the east, and and that's going to bring some milder conditions across the state in a more southerly flow, with some isolated showers and thunderstorms in the northwest, and a few storms clearing in the eastern districts as that trough clears the state. Maximum temperatures around average for most of the state, but staying quite warm in the northeast. As we move on to Sunday, temps become milder again over the agricultural areas and average in the north. A few isolated showers are possible in the far northeast, and a slight chance of a shower in the southern coastal areas. When we kind of look further ahead in the extended outlook to Monday, it's mild, settled and dry start to the week as the next high enters the bight, and it's going to warm up from Tuesday onwards and get hot again Wednesday and Thursday. I wouldn't be surprised, although it's a bit early to say now, but we could see another heat wave into the middle of next week.
All right, well, we'll keep an eye on that. Lee, we usually like to wrap up with the cumulative rainfall figures for the next day or so. Obviously, there's not going to be much to speak of, but there might be a few places that pick up a couple of mils here and there by the end of the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of cumulative rainfall to Monday, we've got some patchy falls, but will mostly be less than 2 millimetres. Isolated totals 2 to 5 millimetres in thunderstorms in the east and far northwest, but not a lot to speak of, Selena.
All right. Well, we hope everyone stays cool out there. Lincoln, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Selena. Take care.
Lincoln Traynor there from the Weather Bureau. The forecast for Saturday for the western inland parts of New South Wales. So looking at the upper western district, partly cloudy there with a high chance of showers in the east, a medium chance elsewhere. Chance of raised dust in the far west in the afternoon and evening. And there's a thunderstorm likely in the afternoon and evening tomorrow as well. Winds will be east to northeasterlies, 15 to 25 k's an hour. They're tending north to northeasterly, 25 to 40 k's an hour before the dawn, before expecting to tend northeast to southeasterly, 25 to 35 k's now in the late afternoon. Overnight temps for the upper western district, they should fall between 18 and 27 degrees, so a pretty warm night. And then during the day, they should climb up to around 33 to 41 degrees, the top there. For the lower western district, partly cloudy, there's a high chance of showers forecast, most likely in the morning and afternoon, then a chance of a thunderstorm in the morning and afternoon as well. Northeasterly winds, 20 to 30 k's now, tending northwest to northeasterlies, 25 to 35 k's an hour in the morning, before tending northeast to southeasterlies, 20 to 30 k's an hour in the early afternoon. Overnight temperatures in the lower western district, well, they should be between 18 and 24 degrees overnight, and during the day, somewhere between 29 and 34 is forecast. It is 12:30 here on the Country Hour.
Coming up on Country Breakfast on Radio National tomorrow, how to protect freshwater turtles' eggs from hungry foxes, and the 10-year-old girl who survived a snake bite.
She took me inside and saw the snake bite, so she put her belt just under my knee. Dad was down at the yards just about to get him off a cattle in.
We'll hear about the chopper flight that saved her life. Join me, David Claughton, at 6 o'clock Saturday mornings or any time on the ABC Listen app for Country Breakfast.
You're listening to Selena Green on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Yeah, great to have your company on this Friday. Coming up in this next half an hour, we love a bit of a rare bird sighting or spotting here in South Australia. But there's been one particular species of bird seen here in South Australia for the first time in several years, and this one is causing a bit of a concern. It shouldn't be here. We don't want it. We'll hear more about what that bird is and where it was seen and why it's a concern after we get some news headlines from Matt Coleman. Good afternoon, Matt.
Hello, Selena. In the news this afternoon, the state government says it will spend $674 million over 10 years to tackle domestic violence. There was a 12-month Royal Commission into the issue, which released its findings along with 139 recommendations in August. The state government has released its response today. It's been revealed the company Deloitte has been paid $185 million to help merge two universities in SA to become the new Adelaide University. The funds paid to Deloitte has been a figure the new university has been reticent to share. When asked during a recent Senate Education Committee hearing into university governance, the detail was cited as commercial in confidence, which the uni later corrected. And South Australia's new Liberal leader Ashton Hearn has unveiled her shadow cabinet just 99 days out from the next state election. The Liberal ministry will include Ben Hood as shadow treasurer, while Heidi Girolamo will take on the health and wellbeing portfolio, and Jack Batty will cover education. Josh Teague will remain as deputy opposition leader, and former leader Vincent Tarsia will retain a spot with the sport, recreation and racing portfolio. More news at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Matt. Matt Coleman with those headlines. And yes, just looking at that new leadership team for the state opposition, a few changes, but from an ag perspective, Nicola Centofanti, the leader of the opposition in the Legislative Council, she will continue in her role as Shadow Minister for Primary Industries and Regional Development and as Shadow Minister for Water as well. Well, usually the news of a rare bird sighting being spotted, that's usually pretty good news, something we celebrate. But the recent discovery of one certain bird species near Adelaide has raised some serious biosecurity concerns. To explain more, I'm joined by James Johnson, who is a South Australian-based senior advocate with the Invasive Species Council. James, good afternoon. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you for having me, Selena. Great to have me.
Yeah, well, firstly, what is this bird that's been seen in South Australia?
Yeah, it's really concerning. It's a red-whiskered bauble. It's a species of bird that hasn't been seen in South Australia since 2018. Unfortunately, it's a single bird that's been sighted in Salisbury in Adelaide's northern suburbs. And this could be a start of a new invasion if we don't act quickly.
So this is not a native species. This is an introduced pest species to Australia?
Yes, absolutely. So that species of bird is banned here in South Australia. So it's been likely brought in by someone wanting to keep it as a pet.
Okay, well, that was going to be my next question. If it has turned up and it's not supposed to be here, where's it come from? So that is the most likely scenario, you think?
That is the most likely scenario. And it's, yeah, it's very unfortunate that it has probably gotten out of somebody's aviary or something like that and gotten into a suburban sort of orchard and made a lot of damage. And that they've thankfully reported it in before it's gone too much further. But we haven't found this bird yet. So we're actually calling on the public to keep an eye out for this bird and report the any sightings to the hotline.
Yeah, because I guess it's one bird. What's the danger here? Why is it such a worry to have this particular species out in the wild?
Yeah, there's a real danger that, you know, if we've seen one bird, there's a chance that there'll be others. And if we don't get on top of it quickly, this can become a huge problem, particularly with our, you know, it's been spotted in Salisbury. That's not too far from our agricultural areas in the north of Adelaide. It could very easily get into these fruit picking areas and do a lot of damage. But not only that, it can really spread a lot of weeds and pests and that sort of stuff into our native environment and do a lot of damage there. So there's a lot of risk there. Historically, this bird in particular has been a problem in Western Sydney, and it's been implicated in the spread of olive trees and that sort of stuff over there. So we really don't want it to be establishing a population here in Adelaide.
Speaking to James Johnson today, he's a South Australian-based senior advocate with the Invasive Species Council. So, James, tell us, if you're asking people to keep an eye out for this bird, can you give us a bit of a description of it? I've had a look online. It's actually quite a lovely-looking bird. I can understand why someone would want it, but as you've explained there, there's a very good reason why we don't want it on the loose. What should we be looking out for?
Yeah, it is a very good-looking bird, and it's quite easy to identify for people. But for your listeners to know, it's a small sparrow-sized bird with a black crested point on top of its head. It's got these bright white cheeks and then a bright red dot just above. It actually covers its ear hole, but most people probably don't know where a bird's ear is. So just above its cheek, you'll see a red dot, and they're quite easy to identify.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that, because no idea myself to look for a bird's ears. There you go. You learn something new every day. James, does this say anything? The fact that this bird was able to be obviously kept as a pet, it's come into the country and it's escaped. Does this say anything to you about the systems of being able to bring in certain bird species here in Australia?
Yeah, there's two pieces to this. There's obviously our border control, and you know, the Australian government really needs to be thinking about rigorously, you know, protecting our environment and agricultural industries from, you know, at the border overseas having these species come in. But there's also a conversation we need to have around these species, you know, coming across state borders, and the work that needs to be done and money that needs to be invested in tackling these species when they do come up. You know, if they do escape here and we see them, we need to get on top of it quickly. And that's why we're urging people to really keep an eye out, call the pest hotline if they see them. But biosecurity at the end of the day is every Australian and South Australian's responsibility.
James, thanks for joining us on the Country Hour. We'll get everyone keeping their eyes peeled for this bird.
Thank you for having me.
That is James Johnson there. He's a South Australian-based senior advocate with the Invasive Species Council, asking everyone, has been spotted in the Salisbury area, still on the loose, this single bird, a red-whiskered bulbul. According to PIRSA, they've got a bit of information about this bird species on their website. These birds were deliberately released in New South Wales, Queensland and Victoria. They're now established populations along the east coast. Back in 2016, a small population was found in the wild in the Adelaide and Mount Lofty Ranges regions. There was a few sightings, including around Cuddly Creek and Mount Torrens, but PIRSA says that that population was successfully eradicated. It is illegal to transport, sell or release red-whiskered bulbuls in South Australia under the Landscape South Australia Act of 2019. So, yeah, keep your eyes out for it. It is 21 minutes to one. And there's
cricket on Wednesday. Join ABC Sport for the third Ashes Test between Australia and England. Hear every ball of the cricket all summer long.
The Ashes.
On your radio and on the ABC Listen app.
Well, let's go back now to the issue of the RIC, the Regional Investment Corporation. In case you missed it earlier, yesterday the federal government finally released its long-awaited response to the review into the RIC. That's the government scheme. It provides low-interest loans to farmers to help them become more resilient and respond to drought. As part of that response announced yesterday, and we spoke with the Federal Ag Minister Julie Collins on the program, she announced a couple of new loan products. One of those is a drought hardship loan of up to $250,000 for farmers affected by drought for at least 24 months, a five-year loan and repayments deferred for the first 2 years. There'll be another concessional loan available. These should be by the middle of next year, to help those impacted by marine harmful algal blooms and marine heat waves. Well, joining me now is Gillian Fennell, who is the chair of Livestock SA. Good afternoon and thanks for your time.
Hi, Selena. How are you going?
Very good. This has been out now for almost 24 hours. What are your thoughts on the new loans that the government has announced?
Well, it wasn't the Christmas present I was looking for, to be completely honest. We've been advocating strongly from Livestock SA since the drought began for a low or no interest loan product for carry-on finance, essentially for our producers who have been affected by drought. This is not that. I do hope some producers get some benefit from these products. It does demonstrate a willingness to be flexible. But I've just finished reading some of the comments and findings from the review, which, to put it mildly, I guess, have upset me slightly.
Okay, let's talk about why, because this has been a long time in the making. It's been a long time waiting for this government response. What do you find, I guess, missing?
I guess the thing that sort of irked me the most about this is that it's the review found that the $170 million in, I guess, in inverted commas, in lost revenue, which would be foregone interest if there was an interest-free loan product through the RIC, would be a cost that was being borne by the taxpayers. We are taxpayers. The people we employ are taxpayers. The businesses in rural, regional and remote communities that rely on agriculture are also taxpayers. So I'm pretty sure that what they meant to say was that it's a cost that would be borne by urban taxpayers. And there's no votes in that. And there's no votes in regional areas either. So that is why I'm profoundly disappointed about this response from the federal government.
The we're talking about concessional loans here, and much has been made around the interest rate. Now, that's been put on hold for an extra 6 months of 5.18%. Is that fit for purpose at that rate, do you think?
No, because realistically, if you have an extensive loan facility with your commercial bank, you can get better rates from your commercial bank, which makes RIC not fit for purpose. Very disappointing that that wasn't considered as part of this review. It defies the purpose of the RIC to offer us only commercial interest rates. If there's a lot about, this is not in the public interest and those sorts of things, I would just like to remind everyone that having a resilient and sustainable agricultural sector is in everyone's interest, because when we are doing well, food is cheaper and we make a lot of money out of our agricultural trade products. So it's definitely in the public interest to make sure that we have access to suitable finance products.
So I understand that Livestock SA, you've actually been advocating for some form of state-based agency for farmers to be able to access. Just explain how you would see that working.
So there's already similar agencies that exist. There's QRider in Queensland. New South Wales also has its own, and it would essentially provide those things to our local, like as in state-based agricultural industries that the feds have demonstrated that they're not willing to do to support us. Agriculture is a really, really important industry to South Australia. Between what we grow and export and what is value added in South Australia, we form a very large chunk of the economy. We employ a lot of people, especially in the regional areas of South Australia. So it's in the South Australian's government best interest to make sure that their farmers, because, you know, they are our government and we rely on them to look after us, it's in their best interest to make sure that their farmers are well looked after to be able to continue to value add to the state and provide that clean, healthy, safe food for South Australians.
Do you see this as a more meaningful form of assistance than perhaps finding ourselves in a drought situation like we have in the last couple of years and then waiting for government to come out with some sort of grant or a emergency response package?
It certainly needs to form part of our ongoing management and the way that we in South Australia look at and manage drought, and not just drought, any sort of natural disaster, droughts, fires, floods, storms, algal blooms, those sorts of things. Climate change modelling tells us that these types of scenarios are only going to become more intense and more frequent. So we really need to have a more proactive approach to how we manage these events and not just wait until it's an emergency and people are actually really on the brink. We need to make sure that we look at supporting industries and communities to make sure that they are very resilient and able to withstand, you know, these shocks and pressures that are going to arise from time to time.
Speaking with the Chair of Livestock SA, Gillian Fennell, today, and her thoughts on the government's response to the RIC review and some new loan products that the government announced yesterday. So in terms of a state-based agency, is this something that you have had the opportunity to raise with the South Australian government? What kind of response have you had?
Well, we've been banging the drum about having a state-based industry, a state-based agency since we had our first drought roundtable. Oh, crikey, when was that? Oh, at least 18 months ago, I would say. And it has formed part of our request to both Minister Scriven and Premier Malinauskas for part of what we would like out of the new any new budgets or governments that might be formed, bearing in mind we are coming into an election next year. So we have put that high on our list of priorities, because it's not just about, obviously, on red meat, wool and making sure that it's not just about us, it's the entire agricultural industry of South Australia. We're all interconnected. We've got a lot of mixed farmers. South Australia has a lot of horticulture. We need to have an agency that looks after us all and makes sure that we can continue to do our jobs even under extreme circumstances.
And Gillian, as I always say, the best time to be preparing for a drought is before a drought, but drought support, this is still very much a timely discussion here for South Australian livestock producers. I know things have eased for some, and we did have some October rains, but there is still a lot of pain being felt out there.
There is certainly a lot of pain still being felt out there. Some people still haven't received any meaningful rain, and recovery for some will take many years, because the amount of rain that they did receive was more just a momentary relief. It wasn't in any sense drought breaking or season changing. It just took the pressure off for a couple of weeks. So we're still in a very heightened drought situation here in South Australia. And as everybody knows, a very long hot summer could see the majority of the state plunge back into drought, in a matter of weeks. And we don't want to raise the issue of maybe what might happen if a bushfire comes along as well. So. But we need to be more thinking about these things constantly. They should be at the forefront of the mind of not just of individual producers, but of industry and government, to make sure that essential things like our food fibre production are maintained, and that we can continue to employ people, to pay our bills, to keep our rural communities thriving.
Gillian Fennell, thanks for joining us on the Country Hour. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on, Selena.
Gillian Fennell there, who is the Chair of Livestock South Australia. The time is just going on 12 minutes to one.
The Country Hour, celebrating 80 years in 2025.
Hi, I'm Fiona McSporran. Happy birthday, Country Hour. 80 years I hear this year. Congratulations. Keep the reports coming. We all listen, especially for your weather reports and also the market reports and your stories that you do that concern us. Thank you for the years you've given us, and all the best for another 80 years. Thanks. Happy birthday.
I'm James Venning, a grower from Butte, and congratulations, Country Hour, for turning 80. It's fantastic. You probably tune in to hear the forecast, but you learn a lot more on the way.
80 years of the Country Hour, Australia's longest running radio show.
And we absolutely love your birthday messages. Thanks to everyone who sent us them. And you can keep them coming because, we are celebrating our 80th birthday officially now. The 3rd of December was our proper birthday. So we are now in our 80th year and we're going to keep celebrating. Now, if you're a researcher, a grower group, or if you're in an industry organisation, you can now apply for the South Australian Grain Industry Trust 2026 funding round, the SAGET round. That's supporting projects that address emerging challenges and delivering benefits to South Australian grain growers. Our SAGET says for this coming year, it's particularly interested in work that's improving summer fallow management, supporting more sustainable grain production, and demonstrating some practical ways to reduce carbon emissions, including better management of nitrogen fertilisers. So they're the types of projects they're particularly interested in funding in the coming year. But they're also looking for projects that strengthen crop protection strategies, including research on barley net form of net blotch, improve fungicide resistance monitoring, and alternatives where pesticides are under review. So you've got to have your applications in by the 30th of January 2026. All relevant application guidelines and forms can be found on the SAGET website, sagetsagit.com.au/funding. Projects are going to be assessed during February and March, and in late March, the successful applicants will be notified. The project managers and scientific officers with SAGET, they're happy to discuss project concepts and plans before you put your submission in. So if you want to brainstorm and run some things by them before you get your application in, their contact details are also on that website as well.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Now we're talking about a bird, a particular bird that's on the loose in the Adelaide area around Salisbury to keep an eye out for. Well, let's go back to the bird theme for now and another bird species that you're being asked to keep an eye out for. And this one's quite timely because with a lot of people out spending time in the headers at the moment with harvest heating up, one thing you could be doing while you're out there to help pass the time is to count quails. The Conservation and Wildlife Research Trust is encouraging farmers to take part in a citizen science project that's hoping to improve knowledge of South Australia's stubble quail population. Matthew Godson is a wildlife biologist. He's leading the project.
This project started back in 2021, where for the first time we involved a heap of stakeholders from different groups and landholders to try and count quail during the harvest. And back in 2021, we had 124 properties surveyed by both harvest operators and also volunteers that were conducting what we term drive counts, using dogs to sort of lift quail from paddocks. And during that time, we had over 17,000 quail counted over an area of just under 12,000 hectares. So what we were able to find back in 2021 was that we had a sort of statewide density of about 1.28 quail per hectare. And when you sort of compare that to the size of the agricultural regions that we were trying to survey, it sort of projected a quail population of around 12 million quail, which is quite a good number. Stubble quail, just one of those species that we don't know much about. And there's certain elements of the community that do care. So it is important in regards to their management to sort of have a bit of an idea on what their abundance and population is like around the state. We've just had a couple of dry periods, so it's probably very important to try and get a sizable count this year. So I'm looking for anybody who's happy to count quail in one of their paddocks as they're running their harvester through, just to help us collect as much data as we can.
So it's been running since 2021. Has it been just non-stop and you're, you know, getting regular numbers coming in that whole time, or is it specifically during harvest season count?
The survey runs during harvest, and the reason we're doing that is it sort of creates a citizen science project. We know that in Victoria they do have an annual survey that's run by or contracted out by their government over there to independent biologists to do a more scientific, robust study. But that sort of operation costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, whereas this operation, or I'd say this project, all it is taking is people's time, and volunteers sort of crunch the data and create reports which we pass on to the Department of Environment.
So has there been a much of a change in the numbers from the first year to, you know, the last few years up to now?
Well, the main change across time, last year was a bit of a fizzle out because harvest due to poor season happened earlier than expected. So we didn't get really enough surveys to give us a number that we're confident in. But I can give you the 3 years before that. So in 2021, we were looking at 1.183 quail per hectare, and then that went up to 1.3 in 22, and then 2023 was up to 3.4. So that was quite a good raise in abundance, but then again, this is only a sort of an index of abundance, and this is one of the things that we want to try and do every year across time to be able to track how quail are on the landscape in regards to, I guess, their densities and where they are and their movement as well, because they do move around based on resources. So in one area, they could be booming one year, but then that area dries out, so they certainly move around. And studies in the 1970s sort of show that quail can easily fly 1,000 kilometres if they need to.
So why is it important to have a better picture of how many stubble quail there are?
The main reason is around management. And of course, stubble quail are a game bird. And, you know, in South Australia, hunting seasons are well regulated and they do need to be sustainable. So we need to ensure that if we have a hunting season, that any harvest of a bird won't have any long effects on at the population level. As I said, in 2021, we sort of estimated or projected there to be about 12 million stubble quail across the state. I believe that the average harvest from hunters is around about 5,000 individuals. So, you know, in terms of management around that aspect, that's really an insignificant impact on the population. So you could say that hunting poses no risk to the existence of stubble quail around the state. I guess that's one thing to look at. And then also to know that, you know, if there's plenty of quail about, you certainly can then put money into other conservation projects that need it more.
So if farmers are in their cab and they want to get involved, what do they have to do?
All that they need to do straight away is, if you have a notebook, just count how many quail you see flushing in front of your header. And at the end of the paddock or the end of the day, just calculate the area that you harvested. And then you can take those notes and just go to the Conservation Wildlife Research Trust website. We've got a project page there. And with that, we've got our online survey form, which you can do on your phone or on a computer through SurveyMonkey, or you can download a paper form which you can fill out. So the most basic information that we need to collect from any people interested to help is sort of the date when they harvested, the crop type, the locality, which is the area where the paddock is. GPS location would be great. They're kept private, but not totally necessary if you don't want to do that. So you've got your total paddock size, the amount of quail counted. So that's really the basic information that we need to be able to draw an assessment. You know, stubble quail are just one of those mystery birds where people don't know too much about them. And most of the work on quail was done in the late 70s and early 1980s. Yeah, and they mean a lot to certain people, like hunters. They love them, you know, they want them to be sustainable, and also they're apparently quite tasty too. So, you know, with all things like fishing, you know, as long as we do things within the regulations and the harvest sustainably, there's nothing wrong with a meal of stubble quail if, you know, they're plentiful.
That's wildlife biologist Matthew Godson there. He is leading the Conservation and Wildlife Research Trust Stubble Quail Citizen Science Project. He was speaking there to Isabella Kelly. So if you are wanting to take part in that and count your stubble quails while you're out and about doing harvest, not sure if you're spotting many out there while you're out and about, if you go to the Conservation and Wildlife Research Trust website. Just pop that in your search engine, and all of Matthew's contact details are on there in the forms that you can download and how to be involved in that project. That's almost it for me for today. Selena Green bringing you the Country Hour today. Cassie Huff will be back on Monday and Tuesday to bring you the Country Hour before she heads off on a Christmas break, but I'll be here sticking around right through Christmas and into the new year. Now, you might be aware that there is a bit of cricket going on, and we'll have the third Ashes test starting in Adelaide on Wednesday. What happens with the Country Hour? Well, we continue. From Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you will find the Country Hour as usual on your radio from 12.05 or 12 o'clock. And then the second half of our program, we will continue and carry on. So if you'd like to stick with us before heading back to the cricket, we will be continuing the second half of our program after 12.30 on our digital, ABC digital streams. Easiest way to find us, download the ABC Listen app. It's a great way to keep listening, to get in contact with us as well, and find lots of great ABC audio content. And find our website as well. If you just search for South Australian Country Hour, all of our episodes and everything is on there, and some links to some of our great stories as well. Plenty of reading material to keep you out of trouble. Thanks so much for your company. It is coming up to 1 o'clock, and it's time for the news.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.